Yesterday, upon the stair, I met a man who wasn't there.
Hello? Can you find me?
He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd go away.
I'm behind you. I'm right behind you.
Last night I saw upon the stair a little man who wasn't there.
Don't be scared. I just want to play a game with you.
He wasn't there again today. Oh, how I wish he'd go away.
Hey there, pond people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Paranormal Whispers, a Through the Abyss podcast production. I am your co-host, Mandy.
And I'm your co-host, Ben.
And today we're fortunate enough to talk to Rick Owens of Go Dark Paranormal. He is also a tour guide in Nashville, so he's going to talk a little bit about his tours in Nashville, which sound incredibly interesting, and I'm so jealous I can't get down there anytime soon to go on one of them. How you doing today, Rick?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
My pleasure. My privilege. Thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. So can you tell us a little bit how you kind of got started into the paranormal field?
Well, I grew up with it. It was part of everyday life. And I had some family members that were sensitive to the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And so it was just part of life. And we talked about it. And they saw it in me and they kind of helped nurture it along. And so here I am.
Now, you grew up in Tennessee, right?
No, I grew up for the most part in Indiana.
Oh, okay.
When I was very young.
Okay. I grew up in Tennessee, and of course, we have all the Southern superstitions and talks of haints and all that fun. So that's what I grew up with.
Yeah. Well, we had it too there in Southeast Indiana. Yeah. So not too far from where you folks are.
Yeah. No, not at all, actually. Not very far at all. Yeah. Well, Ben, he's in California, so he's nowhere near us.
Nope.
I'm from Ohio, though, so I wasn't too far away.
All right.
Yeah, he's a local boy.
Okay.
So you are with Go Dark Paranormal. Can you talk a little bit about your group?
Our group is my brother David and his wife Michelle and myself. And my brother David is, he's the tech guy, and he is the resident skeptic, I guess you could say.
Gotta have one.
Absolutely. But I have felt it for a long time. Convincing him of it is a little bit iffy because I believe he's very sensitive to the activity, to the paranormal. But he does not want to just finally embrace that.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, well, look, you're my brother. It's in our family. So why not? Why not?
That's actually interesting, considering you guys grew up together, being nurtured in that.
We did not. I was already gone before he came along.
Oh, okay.
There is enough age difference between us that I was grown and gone when he came along.
Oh, and he didn't have the same kind of upbringing with that?
He did a little bit, but by the time he was of age to really start knowing what was what, our relatives that were, I don't want to say practicing, but very open with it, were beginning to pass. And so, he did not.
I always feel like skeptics are interesting because they're clearly not skeptical enough to not go, right? They want to be a part of it.
Right.
So something in them's got to believe.
He wants to. He wants to, and he will admit it. But he is the resident skeptic, which is fine, because I believe you have to go into everything with a certain degree of skepticism. Otherwise, you're going to fall for anything.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that.
And it's always good to have one of those in your group, too, because I'm usually the one who gets all excited at first. And then somebody has to calm me down and be like, OK, let's see if we can come up with something as to why that actually happened.
Right.
Yeah.
But his wife, Michelle, is she is just head over heels about it. It's all she talks about, and she's had a lot of experiences with her father and his background, and so that's that is what has piqued her interest, and she has got the appetite for it big time.
Nice.
Well, that's great. And do you guys do like investigate people's houses privately, or do you mainly just do what Not I call yet. Fun investigations?
We haven't done any personal residences yet. We have had some invitations, some people mm-hmm. talk about it, but we haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
Oh, it's something else. Let me tell
you. Yeah, you almost want to give a disclaimer for those. Yeah. Like, they're a little bit sometimes creepier, I think.
You think so?
Yeah, I feel like, because you're not only dealing with the paranormal elements, you also are walking into their environment and their energy.
Psychosis is a good word
right.
for it.
Yes,
yeah.
And sometimes their psychosis, right? Ooh, yeah. Lord. Sometimes you walk in and you're like, this is actually just some sort of domestic issue. Or you walk in and it's definitely paranormal, or it's both, and then you've got a lot going on.
Well, I made the comment a while back. Some folks wanted us to come, and I said, I'm not so sure about that, because they're both so just loony that we'd be picking up on what's going on with mm-hmm. them, you know?
Yeah.
And that flippantly to some degree, but
yeah, I mean, for sure we pick up each other's energies as well. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's one thing that makes it difficult, because I'm an empath myself, and I think I'm pretty sure Ben is too. But there've been, oh gosh, several places where we went in, we're just like, mm-mm, these people, mm-mm, I want to leave. We've had some really bad ones.
Really?
So just, you know, go in protected is all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost feel like by the time someone gets to the point where they invite you into their home, it's generally a bad situation.
Oh, good to know.
With that too, because you want to help. So, but mm-hmm. just be prepared with the amount of help you may have to give.
Okay. All right. No problem.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
I appreciate the input. Definitely. Thank you.
I don't know. I think the three of you will be pretty good, because you guys just have this real good energy together. So I think it'll work out well.
Yeah, we're on the same page. We enjoy it. And whenever we get something, whether it's video, audio, whatever it is, we all sit down and we go through separate things. Each mm-hmm. one of us are responsible for certain things. And then once we have compiled what we have gathered, then we consult the others. What do you think about this? What do you mm-hmm. think about this? Can we debunk this, or what do you think? So we have a good process, or we feel like, and so it works.
That sounds like good. It. Yeah, it's good to bounce things off of each other, definitely.
Right.
Especially in this field.
Yes, for sure.
All right, Rick, tell me about these places you do tours, because I'm from Tennessee, so this is very interesting to me.
Okay, Nashville has a long history. Of course, it was, when it was founded in 1779, they went in with no regard to what was already on the land, obviously. And that was right. pretty much standard practice in the South at that time. Mm-hmm. And so they began just building on, they knocked down the mounds, which were burial cemeteries for the mound builders, the original inhabitants. And then mm-hmm. the American burial grounds all up and down the Cumberland River, they just started building right over them. And of course, you know, that opens the door to a lot of activity.
Yes.
Definitely. And then, of course, at the time that Nashville was founded, it was the Wild West in our country, because the rest of the U.S. had not become part of the U.S. at that point. And mm-hmm. we were the farthest west point. And so they lived that way, definitely. And so we deal with that. We deal with the Native American spirits, and we deal with remnants of the Civil War too, because that was just bad.
Oh yeah,
that was just bad. So we have all that, and then we start the tour begins with the building from the late 1800s that was a saloon and a gambling hall and a brothel. And so we have energy from all of that. We have the history. It was a George Dickel saloon. I don't know if you're familiar with the name George Dickel. It was Jack Daniel's rival.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, everybody knows Jack Daniel's.
Oh, yeah.
But, and in that building, in the basement, things move all on their own. And this is all documented. They have this on all their security footage. Things move around and people get touched, primarily on the back of the neck. in the second floor of the building where the gambling was, they have disembodied voices and footsteps. Oh. And my impression of the voices and all that sound is the way it would have sounded when all the saloons and the gambling halls, because it was part of a complex right there together, okay, all of that, just a big cacophony of noise. The third step, the third floor where the brothel was, which is not in use presently, and they have disembodied voices and footsteps up there. And the footsteps sound like they're running, chasing each other up and down the hallway.
Oh.
And the voices, nothing but laughter. Only laughter. That's all we ever hear on that third floor up there. So
is this like female laughter? Or?
Both. Both. So okay. They may still be brotheling up there. Who knows?
Wow. It sounds like it's good energy, though. I mean, if there's a lot of laughing going on, does it feel lighter?
Yeah, and in the first floor is now the gift shop, souvenir shop for the Hard Rock Cafe.
Oh, okay.
And so that floor has a lot of activity in it. And my impression is that nothing has ever been aggressive. No one has ever been harmed or attacked. But my impression is that they just want to interact. They just want that human interaction that they're missing. And they have mists that materialize and float through there, and it gets quite cold in there when that's happening. And items flip off the displays, like someone's walking through the room, just flipping them out on the floor. And it's just, there's a lot going on in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right next to the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yes, right out in front of it, for sure.
That is very cool.
Do you feel that there's like repeat spirits there, or do you feel like it's kind of just a passer through spot?
I feel a lot of it is repeat, and especially in the basement area, because when it was a saloon, it was a Silver Dollar saloon was what it was. And the reason for that was because tile flooring in the saloon room has silver dollars inlaid in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. From the 1800s. So, you know,
oh, wow,
what they carry, but, in that basement, when they first moved in, built the building in 1893, they were talking about feeling things going on down there because they used it for storage, barrels of whiskey and beer and that sort of thing. And they felt like they were hearing some pounding on tops of the barrels and people brush by them and touch them on the arm and things like that. So I think a lot of it is repeat. Some of it may be residual, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of them, that was where they liked to be. So why not? That's a favorite. That's a favorite haunt. You know, that's where that term comes from.
So, yeah, true. That's very cool. Now you said it's a three-story building. The first one is the Hard Rock Cafe. You said the third floor is not occupied. What's on the second floor?
Second floor is most part of it is empty, but there is an office and a storage room.
Okay, so it's more like a storage type thing. Does the Hard Rock Cafe own it then?
But yes, it is part of the complex. Okay. Hard Rock Cafe is built behind it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that's an interesting story in itself, because where the cafe stands presently was a brothel. It was a large brothel.
Wow.
Biggest one in Nashville. So the activity on all three floors in there is attributed in one form or another to the girls that lived and worked there. And they have a cat spirit in the main dining room. People talk about it, rubbing on their legs all the time. So they have a lot of activity in there too.
Wow. I did not know the Hard Rock was haunted. That just makes me want to go there now.
Yeah.
Walk around a little bit.
Check it out. And you can feel it. Some nights it's heavier than others, obviously.
Yeah.
But when you walk in, you can just feel it there.
That is so cool. So very cool.
So that's where we begin.
Okay.
Then we go up Second Avenue, which was part of the historic district, and all Second Avenue has a lot of activity up and down through there, because those buildings are from the Reconstruction era after the Civil War. So there is all types of activity up and down through there. Of course, that was also where the Christmas Day bombing was. So we lost majority of those structures.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. But we still have a lot, thankfully, in what we have left. And then we go up to Printer's Alley. And Printer's Alley has a long, colorful history, obviously. Been some violence and some death in the alley. And people that are sensitive to the paranormal say there are evenings when they walk into the alley that they feel like the feeling is so heavy and intense that if they spread their arms out, they would be touching spirits all the way up and down through there. So who knows how many are actually walking in that alley. But we talk about some of those, and we go to a pub where the building itself has had 7 violent deaths in it. And I only address one of them unless we get a shadow figure. Mm-hmm. And then we believe the shadow figure of this man, and it's obviously a man, is in the corner where there had been a bedroom at one time, because there were some prostitutes worked out of there. It never was a brothel, but prostitutes worked out of there. But this guy was a pimp, and he was a pretty violent, aggressive man. He used to beat the girls with his walking stick. Mm. And he would have his way with the ladies at night. And he was with one of them one night. She just had all she was going to take. And she saw his walking stick lying within reach. And she just picked it up and went to work on him and beat him till his brains ran out in her bed. So in that corner where the bed was, that we believe that's him when he shows up there. And so
does he get aggressive with people?
He has. We have had... Well, with 7 deaths in that building, it's hard to determine who's doing what. And when we have the mediums and all come in and the psychics, they pick up on so much. Of course, we're only allowed in there when they're open, and that doesn't help. That doesn't help the situation at all. But there was a lady one night was sitting there, and she, of course, this is a pub crawl that I do, a haunted pubs.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, the one I'm referring to at the moment. And she had a little bit too much, and she was getting mouthy, and she was challenging the spirits. And she was being very confrontational. And she jumped up all of a sudden, and she was smacking on her arm, and she pulled her jacket off and pulled her sweatshirt sleeve up, and she had a big bite mark right on her.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's the most aggressive anything I have seen in there. But they also... Wow. In the ladies' restroom, they also get a face in the mirror sometimes, too. Of course, you know, we didn't know that until the age of selfies.
Yeah.
But we get that. But the most haunted building in town, you're not going to believe it, it's the Tennessee State Capitol building.
The Capitol?
A Capitol building.
Why?
Why? Mm-hmm. Okay, fellow Tennessean. The Tennessee State Capitol building is also the only state capitol building in our nation that serves 2 functions. Number one, houses government offices.
Right.
Number two, it's a mausoleum. There are bodies entombed in the walls.
Oh.
I did not know that. Yes. Really?
Absolutely. Plus, sits on a cemetery because there are bodies buried in the flower garden outside.
Now that I believe, yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's not surprising at all.
And it's built on top of a pauper's field as well.
Really?
Yes. So wow. A lot of activity goes on in there.
Do they actually let you investigate it?
No, they do not let us. When they're open, if you want to bring some equipment while you're doing a tour of the building, you're allowed to do that. But as far as coming in on your own and doing that, they do not allow that at all.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Man, that would be incredible.
Absolutely.
To be in there by yourself. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Or, well, with a couple people. But
well, the state troopers who are there 24/7 talk about hearing all this activity. And they hear an echo of a gunshot in the main hall down by the governor's office. Of course, there was a man shot dead there. And they hear arguing because 2 bitter enemies are entombed in the walls there. And so... They have a lot of activity there.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I grew up in Tennessee, did not know that the Capitol actually had bodies in it. That's incredible.
Yeah. It does. It absolutely does.
I mean, I knew a lot of everything.
Sorry. I was to say, how bad would that suck though? If you had like a mortal enemy and then you get buried right next to them. It's like, I can't get away from this guy.
Well, I will give them credit. They decided to put them in opposite ends of the building. Yeah. They're not close together.
No, seems like they still found each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they became enemy because of the construction of the building. Because they go back to when they were building the building.
Wow. So, do you know the story behind that?
Yes, I do. William Strickland, who designed, was the architect for the building. moved here from Philadelphia. He had designed a lot of the buildings in Philadelphia, including the bell tower on Independence Hall where the Liberty Bell.
Oh, okay.
And he moved here to design and build the Capitol building. And he fell in love with Nashville and just made this his home. And so he decided that he wanted to make the Tennessee State Capitol building his grand piece, the one that he would be remembered for. Mm-hmm. And so he started putting everything he had into it, and the administration changed, and they felt like that he was spending too much money and making this building too grand.
Yeah.
So they brought in an overseer for the finances. That's where the rivalry began. Mr. Morgan, who was the overseer, decided that once each phase of construction was completed, before they could begin the next construction, he had to approve it and sign off on it, which slowed the progress down. And so Mr. Strickland found out he wasn't going to live to see the building completed. He died 5 years prior to construction being completed. And that is a result of Mr. Morgan's doing. And so he just asked the administration, when the building was completed, would they move his body to the grounds so he could be near his building?
Oh, wow.
They said yes. And as the building was being completed, they determined it was time to start making arrangements to move his body. And instead of bringing him to the property, they decided they would go ahead and entomb him in the building. And that way it would be his memorial. Mr. Morgan, his enemy, decided that he did not want to be outdone. So he petitioned to be put in the building as well. Upon his death, the administration changed again, and they granted his request. But they put him in the opposite end of the building. So,
well, that was nice, at least.
Yes, it was. It was for sure. So that is the story of those two.
Are they the only two that are there? Do they have more people that wanted to be buried in the Capitol?
They have more that were wanting to be, but they were not granted permission. However, folklore says that there are actually six in the building.
Oh.
Those two are the only official ones.
Can you actually see where they're buried?
Yes, this is like a mausoleum.
Oh, okay.
Right there with the plaques and all.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is crazy.
And it's kind of the story around the other four. Do you know, like, how they were supposedly?
Well, it was kind of underhanded dealings, you know. And I hate, it's a cliche to say money talks, but you know, it's a fact. We all know that.
Yeah.
But they were bribing their way in. However, those four, if you know, and there's no documented evidence enough to support that, but there are four others in the building that the way the stones are there and the marble, they look like crypts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but they're not marked with that information.
Oh.
So who's to say, are they there, are they not? But maybe it contributes to some of that activity that goes on in there.
Fair.
But you know how folklore carries a lot more weight than facts sometimes.
And
makes a lot better story in a lot of cases. But
especially down south.
Yes. But of course, you know, you got to deal with the facts. You have to deal with the facts.
I think it's funny that the two enemies are still there fighting it out. That's just, it's sad, but it's funny.
It is. It really is. Ironic.
Yeah, very.
Very
well, ironic. He must have really loved the place, because you got to love something to want to be buried inside of it.
For sure.
That's incredible.
And then there is, of course, the Southern Turf Building. And the Southern Turf Building at its time was the most elite saloon in Nashville. And that was because of the size and how grand it was for its day. Solid mahogany floors and furniture, bronze statues, imported European paintings, and just, it was very grand for its time. And we're talking late 1800s here. And then when Prohibition became a law in Tennessee, which actually was 1909, 11 years before it hit the rest of the country, then of course everything was shut down, and the proprietor could not keep the building paid for, so they told him he was going to have to leave, go somewhere else. And he said he didn't have a place to go. He didn't know how to do anything else. That had always been his life. So he would just prefer to stay. And they didn't push it at first, but then they finally, February, on a Thursday morning, 1916, they determined he was going to have to go. So they took eviction papers up to his apartment, and they found him. He'd shot himself. So down through the years, he had been trying to lease out parts of the building to other businesses to help pay for the building, but it wasn't enough. And so after his death, new businesses kept moving into the building, but they would never renew their leases. They would always move out at the end of their lease because their offices would get trashed regularly and people would get shoved, and he would show himself apparitions, full-bodied apparitions to them, and so nobody would ever stay. But the businesses that were already there that he allowed to come in never had any problems.
Good for him.
So it's and it's a beautiful building. Beautiful building.
What is it now?
Well, it's been sitting dormant, if I may use that word, for the last 15 years. But presently, the inside is being renovated. And you know, and I know that stir some stuff up.
Yeah, he's probably not happy about that.
Yes, for sure. But it's going, the first and second floor front part of the building are going to reopen as the Sinatra Bar and Lounge.
Oh.
So it's going to be a little more upscale. Not going to be donk, obviously.
Yeah.
So I want to know what kind of experiences they're going to be having. But they've already had some, because the workers talked about it, and when they see me come around, they come out and they say, this is happening, this is happening. So that's always a great story. It's a beautiful building, and they catch him standing in the windows of his apartment from now, time to time in photos.
So cool.
It is for sure.
Oh man, it would be so cool if they'd let you put some cameras in there just to watch. Yeah. Oh gosh.
It would.
Catch him on camera.
That place is a possibility. They really may allow us to do that. Yes. And they may allow us finally, and I've been asking for a couple of years for permission to go down into the tunnels under Nashville.
Yeah.
And do some work down there. And I think they've just about gotten to the point where they're going to allow us to do that.
Wow. I would love to come down there and do that.
If we get the approval, you come on down, because, you know, the team is going to come down and we're going to do this.
Oh, man, that would be incredible.
For sure.
There's a lot of tunnels under Nashville, isn't there?
All of Nashville is built in tunnels. Yeah.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
Then, of course, we have Skull's Rainbow Room. World famous Skull's Rainbow Room. And Skull was attacked. It was a robbery gone wrong inside his club there. And he died the next morning. But he still shows up inside there. And they see him sitting on his stool at the end of the bar quite regularly, or walking out through the dining room. And then if they make some sort of changes inside there that he's not happy with, whatever piece of equipment they have moved or brought in or something like that just will not work. It just will not work.
Absolutely. Oh, those are the ones that drive me nuts, because when they make our equipment stop working, it's just like, oh.
Right. So once they move it back where it needs to be or where it was, works just fine. Works just fine.
So he's an ornery character then.
He's very possessive. Very possessive.
Oh, no.
For sure. Of course, that was his whole life.
Yeah. Is he the only one that still seems to be there?
Well,
that you can tell.
The Rainbow Room is in the basement of the Southern Turf Building, which I was just telling you about.
Mm-hmm.
Ike Johnson, who shot himself, the proprietor of the Southern Turf, he still shows up down at Skull's. And Skull used to tell the story that he knew all about Ike before he bought the basement and moved in down there.
Mm-hmm.
And he always said that and Ike, he was talking about his encounters with Ike and all, and he just said Ike was going to have to get used to him because he paid too much money for this location. He wasn't moving out. So so Ike still shows up down there too, primarily in the kitchen and the ladies' restroom. He locks the stalls.
Ike. Good gracious. He must be a little prankster, or just maybe likes to look at the women.
So he's a peeping Tom in the afterlife.
Oh my gosh.
That could be.
I wonder if those two get along with each other, if they bump into each other.
I think they have gotten used to each other.
Yeah.
That's my impression of it. They have just gotten used to each other.
Well, that's a good thing.
It is, yeah, because Skull was a character all in his own. He's a very kind man, but he was a character for sure.
Oh my gosh, that's funny locking the women's restrooms. See, yeah. At Mackey's, they do the opposite. They open the doors because they're perverts, you know.
Yeah.
That one pervert goes, yeah. So. But, is that the end of, is that where you guys stop your tour?
I'm going to tell you about one more.
Okay. Great.
It was obviously a saloon, but it was primarily a gambling hall.
Okay.
And it was the most violent, roughest gambling hall in Nashville. When they would talk about it, they would talk about the puddles of blood in the floor. And they finally started spreading sawdust twice a day to keep that soaked up. So that history of violence in there contributes to some of the activity. But they also would not always settle disagreements in there. They would step out into the alley. This is Printer's Alley. And shoot it out in the alley.
Oh, wow.
That contributes to some of the activity out there. But there was a man cleaning the stovepipe and the flue on a big coal stove one day, and he didn't have the damper set right on it. So when the wind blew across the chimney, it sucked all that up on him and ignited him. And he burned to death standing there in 3 minutes. And there are nights when the whole front part of that saloon room will smell very strongly of a sickly smelling smoke for no apparent reason.
Oh, God. Ooh,
that's not good.
Yeah. And back where the restrooms are currently, there used to be a large printing press because during the 1940s, it served temporarily as a printing house.
Mm-hmm.
And a man got caught in that press. And before they could get him out, it pulled him in.
Ooh.
So he lost his life. And in that area back there, they talk about still hearing a man calling for help, kicking on the walls back there.
Oh, gosh.
And most of the activity is on the mezzanine, men and women in Victorian clothing, just having a good time, like they probably did when it was their saloon. 3:30 every morning, the chandeliers in the saloon room all begin to sway every single morning. Of course, you know, 3 o'clock is witching hour. So
right.
They're probably telling them it's time to be getting out of here. But there was also, in the winter of 1921, a 14-year-old girl who had been put out of her home because she was pregnant went in over there to get warm, and she went up on the mezzanine back in the corner where there was another large coal stove. And while she was there, she gave birth to her child. She smothered the baby and then hung herself in the corner back there.
Oh my God. You
still hear a baby cry and see the shadows swinging in the corner back there. So there's a lot of activity in there.
That's just sad.
It is. Really is. And when I talk about that, I always tell people that last one. Before I tell them that one, I always tell them it's very sensitive. So be prepared. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Activity in there. So you guys are actually able to go inside that building?
Yes. Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-mm-mm. That's a lot of depressing energy.
No, it, yeah. It is. Absolutely.
For you to have to do that a lot. I don't know how you do it.
Well,
I guess you just get used to it.
You do.
Kind of block it a little bit.
You just know what to expect.
Yeah.
So you just brace yourself. Get ready. Of course, it's like the other times. Some nights is stronger than others.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. I get that, you know, because a lot of people ask me how I can go into Mackey's by myself. I'm just like, I'm used to it. They don't really bother me. Well, the main floor is fine, but I won't, like I said, I won't go to the basement by myself unless I have to, because I know what's down there.
Yeah. About a month ago, there was a psychic on the tour, and I always love it when I have psychics and mediums come on the tour.
Yeah.
And I don't tell the rest of the group unless they want to. But she was telling me, she said, these spirits respect you. They like you because you keep their stories alive.
Aww.
And I thought that was nice. I thought it was kind of cool. Unusual, but I appreciated her telling me that. So,
well, see, that's kind of cool with you because it seems like they're all the same ones that you deal with pretty much on a regular basis. That's nice.
Yeah. So they're accustomed to me.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, with Mackie's, we never know who we're going to have. Well, you know, we have the main ones that we deal with, but our main floor, we've got those portals that they just come and go whenever they feel like it. So I never know who's going to be there. You know, I would love to have a tour of places like you do where they're all the same and you actually can build a relationship with them, which sounds so weird. You're building a relationship with a ghost, but it does happen. It really does.
Apparently so, because it's, of course, you know, when you walk into a place, whether it's very calm or some nights it's just very, it's alive. I mean, it's just, you can feel it outdoors before you go in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just part of it. Just part of it.
Oh, but it's so much fun, isn't it?
It is.
You never know what's going to happen.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, and you get to meet really cool people too, you know.
You do.
You give these tours and you get a lot of these, well, people like you, paranormal investigators, come on and then you make friends.
But you know, most of the people that take these tours are non-believers.
I get a lot of those too, yeah.
It's just entertainment to them.
And that's okay. Yeah. You know, that's totally fine because the history itself is very interesting, which is a big part of why I do what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, the history is important. You have to know the backstory. You have to know the backstory.
Yeah, because that's where, you know, I deal with facts as an investigator, not fantastic stories. Exactly. So given that you are a paranormal investigator, what are some of the places that you visited that you absolutely love? And have you gotten any really cool evidence that you can talk about?
Well, Randolph County in Indiana, the infirmary there, that was an incredible place. It, especially the second floor on the men's side, that particular night that we were there, that was, it was just alive. It was, and we got shadow figures walking up and down the halls, and we caught all that. And of course we did the sensory deprivation, and that was very, very interesting. That was some of the responses. Of course, you know, when you're doing it, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but they're asking, you know, down on another floor or at the end of the hall or something, then they're recording all this, and it's quite interesting. But that was an incredible place. And the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, that was that third floor up there. I don't know how to describe it. We were talking yesterday. We have got to go back as soon as possible because it was incredible. It was incredible. And we had two guests that went with us that are not sensitive to it. And one is a diehard skeptic, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But he was into it more than any of us. I mean, if somebody said, this is going on over here, or this is happening over here, he was first one there every single time. But the third floor, we were getting, all of us were getting touched. Our clothing was getting pulled. And I felt like someone was holding my hand half of the time. And so it was great. And we got a lot of good EVPs up there too.
Really?
A lot of really good EVPs. We sure did.
Now you're going to share some of those with everybody, right?
I will. Yes.
I
will.
I promise we will give you credit.
Okay. Thank you.
We don't steal anything. I promise.
I appreciate that. Thanks. But, you know, it's there. The way we feel about it here is we may collect it, but it's there for everybody. It's there for everybody.
I think that's the way it should be. That, you know, kind of goes into the whole para-unity that a lot of us try to adhere to.
Right.
Not everybody in our community does, but you know, most of us try to.
A lot of them want it exclusively for themselves.
Well, they want to be famous, you know, which, hey, if that's what you're into, you know, more power to you. But just don't drag our community down with you.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, well, Rick, I appreciate you coming on today. Now,
that was awesome.
How can people get in touch with you to take your tours?
Well, if you're going to take the haunted tours, I would recommend go to ghostcitytours.com and book that way. Or you can contact me directly, and I'll give you a phone number. That would be 615-785-2863. Or you can call the office and let me look up that phone number, because I never remember that one. It's 615 as well, obviously. And that would be 562-0506.
And are you the only tour guide that does these?
No, there are six others. Now, primarily, they don't do the tour I do. They do more family-friendly tours. I do the adult tours because of where we go.
Right.
And the subjects that we discuss. But, yeah, you can do family-friendly ghost tours for sure. And they're a lot of fun. And the kids love them. Mm-hmm. And I have I've done them, and in all seriousness, the kids are what make the tours so great. Because they're just all in. They are all
in.
They're taking photos and they're running over showing you, did I get something? Is this something? And so they're all in, and they make it a lot of fun.
But if you want the extreme stuff, the real ghost hunting stuff, you need to talk to Rick. He's your guy.
I am the one for sure.
And he will make it fun. He's a great guy to be around. Tells great stories, obviously, as you've heard today.
Well, I appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely. If they wanted to get in touch with your team, how would they go about doing that?
You would go to you can call me, and or you can email us. And the website is being put together right now to go up. So we'll have that soon. You can find us on Instagram, Go Dark Paranormal. You can find us on Facebook, Go Dark Paranormal, or you can email us at godarkparanormalmidwest@gmail.com.
Okay, great. So I've met all three of them. They're fabulous people. They're great investigators, and Rick's an awesome tour guide. So be sure to reach out, check out their stuff. And do you know what your website's going to be called when you guys get it up and running?
I do not, because primarily David and Michelle handle that.
Well, when I find out, I will definitely post it on a later episode. That way people can go to your website, because I'm sure you guys are probably posting evidence and stuff, which is always fascinating to look at and see.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we'll have to get you come go with us. You too, Ben. You come go with us too.
For sure.
That's a long commute.
I got a flight, but it'd be fun.
Yeah, but you know what? It's a direct flight, LA, you know, Nashville. You can do it. We'll be good.
Sure. Absolutely.
Oh, Rick, thank you again so much for coming on today. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Well, it's been my privilege, and I do appreciate you inviting me. Thank you so much.
Well, I will have you on again soon, I'm sure, because I'm sure you'll have more stories to tell from that tour you do.
Obviously. never ends.
And thank you again.
My pleasure. You have a good day, y'all.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye. For some time.
Oh, yeah, I think that'd be great. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Especially at Randolph. If you want somebody else, I should say, give me a call. Make it happen.
You know, you have to be very selective who you take.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you do. That's why you kind of got to know people.
But I think we'd work fine.
Yeah, I don't fake anything, so we'll be cool.
Yeah, good. We'll do it. We'll get it together.
That sounds good, Rick. Thanks again, man. I really appreciate you.
My pleasure. Y'all take care. All right.
You too. Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.